Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Great performances begin with a comfortable close shave from Gillette. Gillette, making men's lives just that little bit easier.
Game on 2FM with Gillette. When we show our best side, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
Game on 2FM.
Good evening and welcome. Thank you to Jan O'Connell for the news. Jenny Green for gearing us up for a great show. I must be honest, Marie, she's made me hungry for a barbecue. It's Thursday, the 16th of April, and this is Game On.
I'd say you're always hungry for a barbecue.
You're not wrong.
Coming up today, as the GPA prepare players for no championship at all this year, we look at just how far away any return to sport is.
Yeah, everyone agrees that we're probably not going to be back in stands until we have a vaccine, which could be as many as 18 months. So that's going to be a while, unfortunately.
We're on the phone to Athlone. We catch up with Irish rugby hero Robbie Henshaw.
Plus, we've Jeff Shepherd, an angry Stephen Gerrard, and much, much more.
Game on 2FM.
You can text us on 51552, and we'd love to shout out your tweets at Game on 2FM. Marie and Donica here with you till 7. Marie, how are we doing?
Great, actually. Yeah, really enjoying the fine weather, sitting at the back. I don't have a barbecue, but it's something that I might invest in over the next few weeks.
Yeah, it's vital now at this point, isn't it?
Yeah. Although Jenny did put a bit of a dampener on it and said the weather isn't going to be great for the next couple of days. Thanks for that, Jenny.
Played the biggest hits that made you want to go out in your garden and cook. There's something, I don't know, there's something about barbecues though, isn't there? It's just, I don't know, it's just being outside and eating.
I do like burgers as well though.
I didn't want to say it.
I think that might be my favourite food.
I went to one of our teammates, a few of the South African lads do incredible barbecues. They call them braais or whatever it is. And they barbecue bread on it. Like they make, for all the world, a toasted sandwich. But you've never tasted anything like it in your life. And just the tastiest thing of all time. I know it's a crazy thing to say in a barbecue, but it was just delicious.
I think one of the reasons why you probably really like barbecues is that you don't just get served a bit of food, you know, you can kind of fill up your plate really high. It suits you.
And that's why I like South African people. South African people consider chicken salad. You know what I mean? It's not even a meat.
You just add it to whatever you're having.
Yeah,
your
exactly.
Main.
Yeah.
Oh gosh.
Well, we're getting closer and closer to the Michael Jordan documentary. That is something to look forward to, isn't it?
Yep, that is something. It's on Sunday evening, so we'll be able to chat about that on Monday. And I think it's probably one of the only things to look forward to at the moment, because we're still waiting for sport. Although kind of as the weeks go on, there does seem to be a lot of meetings going on, and I'd say that their Zooms have been busy and clubs and associations all over the place. The Premier League clubs are going to discuss tomorrow how best to complete the season. They're still hoping to finish the campaign by the end of June. Tomorrow the GAA are going to vote on a 12-week emergency powers for management committee at Special Congress so they can respond to the COVID outbreak in the best way that they possibly can. So I'd say that everywhere, I'd say they're just going around in circles. It must be really tough because people are calling for answers about when we're going to get sport. And it's hard when you're a player. I can't imagine how you would have coped, Donica. But for people who've put their lives on hold for things, they just want to know. And the people in the associations and in the clubs, I do feel sorry for them because they're waiting for governments to give them guidelines. And because it's evolving so much, they're just not coming.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to chatting to Robbie Henshaw about it, because from a player's point of view, I'll be honest with you, Marie, the control, the controllables, you can't do anything about it. So you're like, not my, you know what I mean? I can't, you know, affect this. So I just got to train away and just be ready, you know?
Yeah.
So it's nearly easier being the player. You're like one of the kids. I'll leave them all sort that out and I can just have a great time here watching Tiger King.
Actually, yeah, you'd be watching Tiger King, going for your nap, having the barbecue, doing a bit of training. You'd be living your best life, actually.
I'm living my best life. Like that, I'm actually nervous at the moment with that Michael Jordan documentary on Sunday night, because I have to get Tiger King finished, and then Too Hot to Handle is out as well on Sunday night, which is like, it's like Love Island, but the opposite. So they don't hook up. But there's a Cork girl in it, so like...
It's like you're speaking a different language now. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah,
we'll have to Google it. I do know what Tiger King is, though.
Yeah.
I haven't watched it.
This is going to be our new thing. Too hot to handle. There's a cork girl in it, so...
I think it's safe to say this is going to be your new thing. I don't think it'll be mine. I might focus on the Michael Jordan documentary over the weekend, and you can
You might get
binge
hooked. Just watch one.
Too hot to handle.
Too hot to handle. Yeah, I think it's Nicola O'Brien. Watch
okay. Him. Somebody might text us in 51552.
512. Come on, the Rebels.
Who is the cork girl in Donica's new favourite show? Shamrock Rovers players agreed to take 25% pay cut today. A lot of uncertainty over the resumption of the League of Ireland. So we're seeing quite a lot of that with different teams and players having to take pay cuts. New Zealand as well, the All Blacks took pay cuts today, and we'll be chatting to Hannah Bowe all about that.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to hear that take on it, because there's a lot going on with rugby at the moment. To be fair, Marie, it's a young sport in terms of professionalism, but I think there is an opportunity actually to... Maybe we always slag, myself and Ruby slag you more so about the fixtures, but there's a way now to get rugby right at the moment, to make it a global game, as opposed to, you would have heard it before, Tier 1, Tier 2, Northern Hemisphere, Southern Hemisphere. It needs to be fair for all. And there was good news today that World Rugby are, I think it's 92 million in relief to World Rugby, but for that to be... paid back, and I think we need proper structures within competitions. And you know, we saw Japan being brilliant this year, and they need a leg up now. You know, other teams like America need a chance, but that's me being biased for the rugby stuff again. I can't wait to chat to Hannah.
I'd say there's a lot more than even the Tier 2 nations that are going to need a leg up at the end of this, Donica. Very, very worrying times. Yeah. Now, on to our first guest. John Conlon joins us on the line because earlier today it was reported the GPA has warned its members to prepare for the possibility that there won't be a championship this year, which will be very disappointing news for everyone involved in sport if it does come to pass. Now, it is just the GPA warning its players, and we don't know yet what is coming down the track in terms of the COVID-19. Social distancing and the GAA's plans, if they have any. So, John, how are you? And first of all, what was your reaction to that GPA news today?
Hey, Marie and Donica. I suppose it's uncertain times that we kind of live in at the moment. And as a player and as kind of a captain of a team, looking forward to the championship. It's the right kind of thing to put out. We are kind of reading in the lines that it might go ahead, and nothing should really go ahead until everyone's safety is guaranteed by the GAA.
John, the coverage in Clare must be fairly bad. We're going to have to ring you back, and we'll chat to you again in a second.
Brian Lone has them all on Zoom, Marie. That's what they're at.
Brian Lone probably took the phones off them, and no contact. And you have to get a bat phone if you want to contact the outside world, as they train quite a lot. I know we're kind of talking about players being chilled out and all the rest, but like when you're trying to juggle your job and your sport, Donica, and the uncertainty and everything else that goes with being an amateur player, like for you it's different. Professional, you could just chill out, but you're trying to factor in everything.
And that's why I'm looking forward to chatting to John. Like obviously an All-Star and All-Ireland winner with Clare, but being captain now and having the responsibility, because I've been there where the younger fellas are going to the leader. They're like, John, what's the crack? You know what I mean? And when you don't have the answers, sometimes you can't say we don't know. You know, Marie, you have to fake it.
A lot of inter-county managers and players have come out and said that they just want clarity. But I don't know when it's going to come now. John, we might have clarity on the line with you. John, you're back.
Yeah, back again.
Good. We were just saying there that, look, everybody is kind of starting to prepare themselves for a summer without championship hurling and football. And for a player and a captain of a team, it must be quite difficult thinking, I know you're injured and we'll go into that a little bit, but thinking that there might not be any on-field action this year.
Yeah, look, I think it's very important that everyone kind of, that everyone's safety is guaranteed first before any championship game takes place or anything takes place within GAA circles, both in club level and inter-county. And there's a lot of uncertainty there. Even for club players, I see my own brother is trying to do with a training at the moment, and he's asking me, is it going to go ahead or is it not? And then you have the Clare players as well, the same thing. And they're all trying to do their own little bit and train away, and I think a little bit of clarification would be no harm from the GAA, both for club players and inter-county players.
John, a leadership role, it's tough at the best of times, but when there's such uncertainty like this, can you give us the feel? Obviously, there's guys in your dressing room coming to you looking for, like you mentioned, your brothers there for your advice. What's been said around your dressing room?
Within our dressing room, look, I suppose the last 2 weeks, we've taken off as a group, and the management had a plan in place leading up to the championship for, we'll say, the 17th of May. When our first game is against Tipperary, that we were going to take a 2 week break now and then kind of go back to our clubs and then go flat out for 5 to 6 weeks. So I suppose lads have been away for the last 2 weeks and been quiet, but as of last night, they would have been starting back at their training plan, joined the GPS systems. Every lad has that, and they can transfer it on through the internet. So they're following training plans, and the training, from what I was looking at the other day, was looked really hard. And talking to the lads last night, that it was a really hard session the other night that they had to do on their own. And there's only so long that players can do that, and not really have any light at the end of the tunnel. Is the way they're kind of describing it to me. Like one of them Snapchatted me last night that he's raring to go. Like, but I said to him, probably no chance. It's probably a better chance of me coming back for championship. But look, like it's very uncertain. And I heard Kieran Kingston come out the other day that there just needs to be more clarity. And at least if the GAA set out, look, there might be championship in August. At least management teams, both club and intercounty, can plan towards that and give lads a break at the moment, maybe, and let them have the bit of downtime that they might need instead of training away at the moment and not really know what's happening and what's going to happen, in the future.
John, we know that the GPA are constantly in touch with their players, and we've kind of started to hear little bits coming out, and the consensus seems to be that GAA players aren't keen on playing behind closed doors. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, personally, I wouldn't be a massive fan of it. We've all played those challenge matches where there's no one inside in Hughesy Park or Turles or so on and so forth, and to hear the ball being poked over and back, and it just doesn't add to the same intensity and same drive. And and anyone that does win the championship this year, if there is a championship, people are probably going to say it's a tainted championship because it'll be a different format, I'm sure, and then there's going to be different scenarios and where players up to the same levels of fitnesses and stuff, so there's going to be a lot of question marks over everything at the end of the day anyway. It's going to be very, very weird times we live in, and very weird times going forward.
There's a kind of a strand of the conversation as well that, you guys are amateur players, you can't just go to a hotel room and self-isolate like a Premier League player might be able to before and after a match. And there's a reality there with GAA people as well. I spoke to one today and he's living with his 90-year-old granddad, and he doesn't want to even risk going to a group session or to a match or anything that might put his grandfather at risk. Do you realistically think that there will be GAA before a vaccine?
No, I've for a number of weeks, I don't think there will be a GAA championship this year until there's a vaccine there, so that everyone's safety can be guaranteed, and also their families. And look, we players within our group as well, that their grandparents live with them, and I even know my own mother who has cancer twice, and she's very scared at home and hasn't left the house in the last number of weeks. And I'd hate to think that if I was playing and able to play, that I wouldn't be able to see them for a number of weeks. We're only amateur at the end of the day, and this is not our livelihood, and this is not our profession. And until all those guarantees can be made by the GAA, then I don't think players can be, or any championship can be played, or any hurling games.
And John, you mentioned that there, you see it right under your own roof, the importance of, it's sport and we love it, but it's small when it comes to real life matters.
Yeah, look, like a lot of my family are scared. It's just been a challenging time, and I see a number of my uncles have different underlying health conditions, and they're out cutting the garden and stuff. But they're construction workers and want to be out working the whole time, but just can't do it. And look, it's a worrying time, and a worrying time for them, and a worrying time for us all, because it's weird to be able to just, when you go down to your family home house, that you have to talk in through the window to each other, and it's just strange at the moment.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier on your own health. You missed out on the fitness test. How are you coping? How are you injury wise?
Yeah, look, on the last night we were training. We were talking about in the warm up. So, you know, there was rumours the schools were going to finish. I'm a primary school teacher, so there's a few of us saying, "Geez, the schools are, there's a rumour that that's going to end at the end of the week. So this could be our last training session." And we were into the first drill, and I went to the side step, and my kind of leg was faced in a different angle, and I tried to push off, and the defender kind of pushed into me, and my ACL went. So, unlucky I got that kind of crucial injury, but thankfully I got into Century before the last day of surgery, and got it fixed, and I'm on the road to recovery now. And I suppose it's an ideal time, I suppose, at the moment with lockdown and everything. That, you know, all I can really focus on is trying to walk, start get my walk back, and get my rehab done each day, and that's my priority, as it was at the moment.
So, John, you're 4 weeks post-op, is that right, on your ACL?
2.5, yeah. Wow. 2.5. It was just one of those freak kind of things. We were on an AstroTurf as well. Maybe that didn't help, I don't know, but... yeah, just my foot went in a different angle, and I just couldn't, as I pushed out, I heard the crunch, and I knew it was my ACL straight away, or something to do with my knee, because we'd been talking about it a few weeks earlier, and we played Kilkenny in a challenge, or in the league, and Adrian Mullen jumped up for a high ball, and ruptured his ACL as well, and we were just talking on the way back in the bus, and everything that the lads described, that was going through my head after it happened. I heard the crunch or the pop, and then I heard, you know, I just felt that massive pain for 1 minute that the lads described, and yeah, I knew it was after some serious damage after it happened. So
it's amazing. Outside of sport, you hear about them a lot, but you're actually describing the noise it makes, and you might give an example of the instability. I remember when my teammates doing it, running in straight lines, they could do it all day, but then they'd go to turn and just fall in a heap.
No, that's the way they described it. The lads were just describing on the bus on the way home. They described two or three of them had, Podge Collins had it, one of my teammates had it done, and there was another few players that they were talking about that they'd ruptured their ACLs, and how they described it, that they got this massive pain for a minute, and then after that you think you can run but you can't turn, so that's your issue kind of.
And John, like anyone that has followed your career and knows you, knows that when it comes to being a professional amateur, which is what you are, most GA players, you're right up there. Like, you're obsessed with your training, with your rehab, with your prehab, but just like especially with your food, and that's been well documented over the last few years. The amount of time and effort you put into it. Like, what's it like for you now?
I won't lie. The first 2 weeks, I suppose, was a shock, and unluckily, you know, I just went off the kind of rails, I suppose. But sure, that's no harm either. So I was just confined to the couch and trying to do my prehab to get right, and then my surgery got brought forward on the Thursday, so I was really pushing hard to try and get the swelling down, and usually they give it a month before they have the operation, but I had 2 weeks, so I worked hard on it, and I got it down to a sufficient enough level so that it could operate, and so I was kind of delighted. But yeah, and my nutrition was poor, as I didn't have really a routine up until about a week ago, where I could actually start to walk a little bit and start doing other exercises and upper body kind of sessions and stuff as well. So I'm delighted now. The last week I got back into a good routine and got back into proper eating properly and just feeling better about myself and just feeling good. So
are you still blending all your food?
No, that was just a thing on a match day. I kind of got into it. There's I haven't felt bloated playing matches, and I just felt that it would be like a smoothie, it would probably go down quicker, so it seemed to be working, so I just kept it up, and the year was going well, so kept it up for a while.
It's dedication for you.
John, you come across like one of these guys. I've been in the dressing room, there's Tupperware everywhere, you know, they're constantly putting out Tupperware packs and pots.
They'll be always laughing at me. I'll be coming with a bag full of stuff, going to matches and pillows and
dead right.
Every little thing that helps.
100%.
John, RT Sport are going to show some classic games over the next few weeks, and it's starting tonight at 9:30 on RTE2 and RTE Player, and they're showing the 1995 All-Ireland Hurling the Final, which of course you and I, well, I remember, you're probably just out in Appies when Clare lifted the Liam McCarthy, but you were lucky enough to grow up in the area then with all those heroes to look up to, all the great guys around the county who changed the fortunes and the image of Clare Hurling during that time. What are your memories?
I have massive memories. I'm actually looking forward to watching that tonight. You don't get the chance too often to, when it comes around, to watch it, so it'll be a great one. But it brings back super memories of my childhood. I suppose when I was younger, my way would, I'd go to school and I'd come back, and my father used to collect all the golden years, we'll say, the reviews of the championship, and I'd watch them before, after my dinner, and we'd watch them then, and then I try and go out and reenact them, and then start my homework later on after that. But just reviewing back through all them, even the other day I saw the Galway Cork 1990 final, and I used to love watching that as well, and reenacting Joe Cooney and stuff like that. But yeah, I remember that All Ireland final, my parents wouldn't bring me to the match, so I was really sick with them. I had one of my cousins minding me, and for the minor match, I wanted to close the curtains because I couldn't see the TV with the sun, and she wouldn't let me. So I went running away for an hour or two, and I got back in time anyway, just for the throw-in of the match. So I was delighted that evening anyway, and I remember going to Shannon Airport the next day to meet the team. Back then, they had loads of money. They were able to fly to matches. And and I remember 97 as well, going back to Shannon to meet him in Ennis, and I remember climbing the trailer that they were going up in Shannon, and climbing the sides of it and getting up to right where they entered the truck and high-fiving them all. So, yeah, they were great times, and being at that All-Ireland in 97 as well, they were my heroes. And lucky enough that a few of them have managed me in different senses, in different, you know, fields, and see their passion and you know, their drive, and you see why they won those All-Irelands and why they brought great times to Clare Hurling.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, John. I have to say that, you know, we only live down the road from each other, but they definitely inspired, I think, everybody in the whole county, and lucky enough to have produced, to help anyway along the way, and to produce some hurlers that went on, like yourselves, to win in 2013. So over to you guys now, next generation.
No pressure.
Thanks, John, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks very much. Thanks, Marie. See you again.
On 2FM with Gillette. When we show our best side, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters. Game on 2FM.
Maria, I know you're glad to chat to Clare captain John Conlon there. Amazing to hear, though, that he did his ACL, isn't it?
Yeah. At the time it was reported, all right, that he was had suffered something, but just to hear it there confirmed from him, and he's luckily enough said he got that last surgery date in the sports clinic and has the operation done now. He has some time to do some rehab.
Could be perfect timing for him. I know, like I know. Looking some bit positive on it. Whatever about seeing him back on the pitch. Primary school teacher, get him back in the classrooms. Those people are heroes.
I know. I think everyone has learned that over the last few weeks, that teaching's actually hard work. They deserve those holidays.
Yes, they are heroes.
So, Donegal, look, I think it nearly goes without saying that for the last few weeks, we've all been wondering when we'll get to see our favourite team or any team in action again. And I was quite hopeful for a while. And then I read an article in Sports Illustrated written by Stephanie Epstein. And she said, her headline actually really said it all, "Bursting the Bubble, Why Sports Aren't Coming Back Soon." So she's joined us on the line now to tell us exactly why we shouldn't be getting our hopes up. Stephanie, how are you?
Hi, I'm fine, thanks. How are you?
We're good. We're very good over here. So I was quite positive about things, and then I read your article, and you did what a very good journalist would do. You laid out the facts and painted a very clear picture of the challenges that face sports if they do want to come back. So can you just give us a little bit of a summary of what you found when you were writing the article?
Well, sorry to have ruined your day.
You've ruined her year, Stephanie.
It ruined mine. My own as well. So I heard a lot, and at least in the U.S., a lot of people have been talking about the idea. I mean, the president even said he'd like to have fans in the stands this summer. And I heard that from him. I heard that from athletes and leagues, but I had not heard very many scientists asked the question of how feasible is this. So I called a few, and everyone seemed to agree that we will not have sports with fans until we have a vaccine, because you just can't have 40,000 people, 20,000 people, 40,000 people, 80,000 people in the stands packed together like that until we can be confident that we're not going to spread the virus. So that's out. But people had been talking about the possibility of playing the games without fans in attendance and putting them on TV as sort of a way to bolster the country's hopes. So I asked them about that. And they felt, basically they just took me through what it would take without really drawing a conclusion, and we sort of tried to allow the reader to see how unlikely this is. You have to have not only the players quarantined, but coaches, support staff, the bus driver who's driving them from the hotel to the ballpark, to the arena. You have to have, you know, their trainers. If it's going to be on TV, there has to be some kind of video crew that has to be in quarantine. The hotel housekeeping would have to be in quarantine because you want the loop totally closed. You don't want anyone coming or going. So all of these, you're looking at thousands of people, not just the players, who are going to be asked to be away from their families for months. So we have to be able to pay all of those people to do that. And then what it really comes down to, I think, at least in the U.S., is we have such a shortage of testing at this point. And in order to make a plan like this work, you would need to test the players, if not every day, then several times a week to make sure that nothing had gotten in. And so we are certainly not yet at the place where we can afford to divert thousands of tests to professional athletes. I mean, our healthcare workers aren't getting tested. So we need to wait until we have ubiquitous testing. One expert thought that maybe by the middle to the end of May we could do that, which would put us on track to have sports at some point in the fall. But even then, we don't have a better solution right now than shutting it down if a player does test positive. Even if everybody follows the rules and doesn't go outside, if somebody delivering groceries walks by somebody else who coughs on the lettuce and a player catches it, we don't really have an alternative at this point to shutting everything down for 2 weeks and waiting to see who else develops it. So that would be tough. Even if we can start, it would be hard to finish.
Stephanie, coughing on lettuce is never acceptable, but we need some bit of hope. And I can understand what you're saying about big squad games like football and baseball, but what about games like golf and maybe basketball where there's smaller squads? Is there a chance
tennis?
Yeah, tennis, there we go.
Yeah, the experts I talked to did say that they thought basketball, I think, takes more. The problem is that they are so close to each other all the time. But they thought golf and tennis made a lot of sense to be the first sports back because there are no teams, so you don't have to come up with a locker room situation where they're all close to each other when they're dressing. You also, they don't actually ever have to touch each other. If you're swapping out the ball for every serve, and then certainly golfers would only be touching their own equipment, they thought that those two sports specifically would really lend well to being the first ones back. So there is some hope that we could see those in the fall.
Another worry that a lot of people have as well is diverting crucial services like ambulances to sport when they're needed elsewhere during a medical pandemic.
Yeah, I think that's a real concern. And then also, not only do you have to have an ambulance outside every major sporting event in case someone gets hurt, which then is, of course, stocked with paramedics who have protective gear that people who are treating COVID can't use. You also, what if somebody tears an ACL? Then that person has to go into surgery, and is that really a good use of our doctors and nurses and their protective equipment? It's not just, you know, the training staff has to be working on elbows and knees, and a lot of those doctors right now are helping with the COVID effort in the U.S. So that's not a great, it's not great to call them back, say thank you for your help with that, but we actually have to, you got to go wrap a sprained ankle. So it's hard to justify diverting those resources, I think.
That does make a lot of sense. Our usual eye on a stateside, Jeff Shepherd, also joins us on the line. Jeff, I know it's not sport, but WWE was deemed essential service in Florida. Should that perhaps give us some hope?
Yeah, there's a lot, I think, that goes into the... that went into that decision, which I really appreciated about with Stephanie's article was, you know, I've seen a lot of these, you know, other articles about these proposals of, well, they're going to do this and they're going to isolate the players here and they're going to do that. But she went into it And it wasn't from any side of a political thing. It was just, look, we're talking to experts, and this is what's going on. And so, look, some of these decisions are getting made through the scope of politics, but the article that she laid out was fantastic because it basically just said, you know, realistically, this is what's going to have to occur. I don't necessarily know if they're going to continue with WWE matches. I mean, you know, they can't, you know, the UFC had this big plan, what, a week or so ago to have an event, and they were going to basically host it out on an island, you know, right off the coast of California. And the governor of California said people would try to travel to it all across the state, and we're sheltering in place, so they're not going to do it. And now potentially Florida might let them. So it may not necessarily just be WWE. It might just be, you know, specific regions of the country and how their leadership feels about, you know, when they it's quote unquote time to reopen and, you know, get back to some sporting events.
And I know Marie was joking, but it is an industry, and we've seen it already. They're starting to cut some of their talent or their, you know, sports stars or entertainers.
Yeah, I mean, and those are some of the things that I know people wanted to try to avoid having to do, but it gets back to the point that, you know, you're seeing that the medical experts are saying is the quicker we are adopting these, you know, harsher short-term measures, the quicker we'll be able to get through on the other side of it. But to the point that I've heard a couple of times, you know, on the show in the last 20 minutes that I've been listening is, until there's a vaccine, there's really no point in talking about reopening to large events. And the logistics that Stephanie lays out in her article about just trying to put this all together, even with no fans in attendance, it's kind of impossible to think that we could pull it off.
And Stephanie, I know here we're just looking forward to Sunday and to seeing the Michael Jordan documentary coming out. So I can imagine the hype over your guys' way must be absolutely massive.
Yes, it's tough. People are really trying to come up with something to fill that hole. I think marble racing has taken off here. That's been very popular. A lot of broadcasters have been commentating on the way their dogs are eating and the way their children are playing. And yes, the Michael Jordan documentary, I think, is going to be a big hit.
Yes. Stephanie's just on it. Your article is a checkmate. It's over. There's no fighting it out. But have you any hope for sport?
Yeah, you know, I think part the hope that I have is, number one, that we might have, if we get the testing soon, that, I think, changes the picture. And then the other thing is, well, first of all, if we continue to do what we're told, as you said, you know, people, the harsher short-term measures will make this, we'll get rid of this faster. But then the other thing is that things change so quickly. I mean, by the time we get off the phone, I think probably there will have been 6 new developments. And so that was the best guesses of the scientists I spoke to at the time I spoke to them. But things do move really quickly, and it's possible that this is going to, that there is hope for us. You know, you mentioned the individual sports that I think could come back sooner, and I think that hopefully if people really continue to take this seriously and start taking it more seriously in some cases, then we have a chance to see something we'd like to see in the fall.
Stephanie Epstein of Sports Illustrated, thanks so much for joining us. Shep, before we let you go, the documentary, the Michael Jordan one, how excited are you?
Oh yeah, I mean it's you know, every single day you know, we get a little bit closer, and I've got an 11-year-old son who is obsessed with basketball right now, and he has asked me every single day about something about Michael Jordan, something about the Bulls. I would be remiss if I didn't say this, though, guys. Sunday is also my 10th wedding anniversary.
Woo-hoo!
So, you know, it's going to be a big day for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, there's a brilliant documentary on as well, Too Hot to Handle. There's a corker in it. You pick. Go with Marie on the documentary about Jordan, or, you know, you can join me watching the dating one, or spend some
That's
time
right.
with your wife.
Have a barbecue, Shep, watch the MJ documentary, and do not listen to Donica O'Callaghan whatsoever.
Yeah, true. I've kind of picked up on that the last couple of months.
Shep, just on the documentary, there's a huge amount of people previewing it now and talking about it, and MJ said himself that he doesn't come across too well in it. Why is that?
Well, I mean, I think if you don't already know, he is widely considered. He is, you know, the term the alpha male. I mean, he is the most alpha male that there's ever been in NBA. He did not want to lose whatever it was. You know, he talked smack on the court. He would find your weakness and attack it. But playing cards on the plane, playing in the hotel, anything that it was involved in, he was going to win. And if he somehow lost, he was a sore loser, and he never let you forget it, and he would just egg you on and egg you on until you gave him another chance to beat you. And so I would assume that that's probably going to be captured and, you know, thoroughly, you know, shown in this documentary. I mean, if it's 10 parts and you're going to be talking to all these people about, I mean, if somebody asked, you know, Steve Kerr or Dennis Rodman or Scottie Pippen what made Michael Jordan Michael Jordan, it would be the same answer that you would give, that Phil Mickelson would be asked, why is Tiger Woods the way he is? I mean, he's just, he was born and bred to do a certain thing, and he was the most competitive.
Oh, we seem to have lost him.
Yeah.
I'd say his wife cut him off straight off. She's there 10 years anniversary of enough. There's no sport on and he's still chatting to that Irish crowd.
She's saying, don't listen to Donica and watch a dating show on her anniversary.
That's true. That's true.
Let's take
but what
break.
Else can they do?
Game on 2FM with Gillette. When we show our best side, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
You're eager to get
there.
Back in. It's a government announcement, Marie. You know what I mean?
You had one job.
Stay at home and wash your hands, I think, was the end of it.
Thanks, Donica. So I am a little bit excited about our next guest. He's one of the biggest stars in Irish rugby. But Donica, I think that over the last few months, you and I have spoken about him more because of his eyewear range than his sporting prowess. But I think that says more about us and the show than it does about what he is capable on the rugby field.
Yeah, very true. But I do think it's an unmet need for us. We're looking at too many blue screens at the moment. So
Robbie Henshaw joins us on the line. Robbie, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Good. I just want to say first, right, Donica and I both bought your glasses, but I actually bought them first and then he copied me.
Yeah. Robbie,
very
I don't,
thanks
I don't
much.
Deny that. She's an influencer.
I am.
Oh, very good. How are they doing?
Great, yeah. I think Donica's head is a little bit big for his. You might need to get like an extra large size made just for his giant noggin.
Whoa,
yeah,
easy.
Yeah, 100%. That issue came up with a few lads in the squad that we might need to make some XL sizes for a few of the front rowers, maybe. So
can I tell you where my problem?
Work on.
My problem with him is, Robbie, and it might have happened to you. If it hasn't, it probably will. I broke my nose a few times, so it doesn't sit on the bridge of my nose.
Yeah, so that's a big issue as well with my nose because I've smashed it a few times as well. So it kind of sits a little bit off sometimes as well. So I just have to kind of shove it down hard, but. The issue is you do get a bit of a sore nose then.
Yeah.
Well, mine are perfect anyway. I'll just say that.
Robbie, you're one of these annoying fellas. On the pitch, you put you in any position, you'd probably be man of the match. And then frustratingly off the pitch, you can do it all. Musical talents, business interests, you make up for your good looks with being a bit of crack. But, you know, how are you getting on at the moment?
Yeah, going well at the moment. It's obviously a strange time for everyone in the country. You know, rolled the clock back about 4 or 5 weeks ago and we were in Abbottstown getting ready to play France, and that was Monday, like everything was set to go ahead, and then we got an email from World Rugby saying, or from the Six Nations Board saying it had been cancelled, so we were then kind of forced to reassess, and we were brought back into Leinster then on the Thursday, Friday for training, and ever since that Friday, we've been just, you know, on our own. So it's definitely been challenging, but I suppose we're kind of getting better and we're adapting to the scenario at the moment by, you know, with Leinster giving us remote programs and giving us gym equipment and things like that. So we're definitely adapting, but again, it's tough for everyone. So,
what are you finding is the biggest challenge?
Probably going from day to day to see the lads like and having a crack in the change room. I know you know yourself, Donica, like you can't beat the crack in the change room, and seeing everyone day to day, it can be quite lonely. So that's why I left Dublin to come back to Athlone, because had I stayed there, I would have been, you know, in my house on my own. My other half is in her home house in Mullingar, so I came home to the family house just to be around people, because definitely can get a bit lonely, I'd say.
And Robbie, it's been an incredible year. Like, you're 43 caps and counting. You've done it all with the Lions, won everything with Leinster and Ireland. But, you've picked up some bangs and knocks over the course of it. It's been good to have a bit of time to leave the body heal.
Yeah, that's I suppose that's one side of looking at it that a few people have mentioned to me already, and I think it is a good opportunity to, I suppose, dust off a few niggles that you pick up during the year. And you know, Six Nations is definitely one of the most taxing on the body because the games are so physical, and so I mean, yeah, it's no harm as well that players can kind of fix the niggles that they had, but you know, if we were all guns blazing, ready to go and you know, bounce back from the England defeat. And, you know, that can be a bit of a frustration point to it as well, that players just want to get back out there and you know, right or wrong. So that's one side of it. But I suppose we're in a pre-season period now, in April. It seems completely weird. But, yeah, we just started our pre-season now, so we're into our second week of pre-season, which is weird.
Ugh, double pre-season, yuck.
Yeah.
Robbie, Donegan mentioned at the top of the show, for players, you know, it isn't as bad because, so you know, someone else is looking after the bigger picture almost, that, you know, you can kind of just get on with what you have to get on with. But there is a reality there as well. And like we've spoken about it a few times, professional careers are short. And if you're missing out on time and the financial problems that are coming down the track as well with the effects of COVID-19, like, is that a worry for you? Like endorsement, sponsorship, contracts, everything that comes with it?
Yeah, I think the worry is the uncertainty from point of it. You know, it's you know, we're at the moment where all the players have agreed to take a pay deferral at the moment, but you know, that's until things are fixed, and we don't really know the end date when things are going to be, you know, resolved. So at the moment we have the 18th of May, I think, is what, when Leinster are due to kind of try and start reintegrating players back in small groups, I think. But again, we don't know if that's certain yet. So that's the side to it. And then I suppose it just goes to show, you know, there's talk of playing games behind closed doors, and I'm not sure like how that'll come about, because now it just shows to us how important the fans are from our perspective, because, you know, they basically fund us, and you know, it just shows how important they are, because TV rights aren't as big, you know, in rugby than they are in soccer, say. So that's there's kind of things that have been bouncing around, and you know, it's kind of where we are at the moment. But hopefully things kind of get back to, it'd be great that if we could get back in on the 18th and start kind of just slowly reintegrating. But again, hopefully it goes ahead.
And Robbie, we were chatting about the glasses and the kind of business interest. Obviously, outside it, you try to have a rounded person and make sure they're looking forward to life outside the bubble. How has things with the glasses gone in the last while?
Yeah, it's actually been good. So the business started a few years back when I did, firstly, a bit of promotion work for a European eyewear brand who was fairly random, but a family friend was using them, and I did a bit of promotion, and then the opportunity came up to basically develop our own sunglasses brand, which we started, and then we added the blue light computer glasses, which I had a big interest in because it kind of helped me a lot from staring at screens in the evening, from looking at clips in the evening, and doing a bit of college work as well. So it definitely helped my eyes, and it helped me sleep. I wouldn't be the best sleeper, so I definitely found getting into a kind of routine of putting them on in the evening, I definitely found they were beneficial. And then hence the name, like we have some family involved as well. So my first cousin is kind of head of brand and digital for the glasses. So it's a nice thing to have. It's random. I suppose loads of big glasses and white glasses. It is a little bit random, but I suppose it's kind of a business. And it's something that I don't think had been done by much sports people before. So that was kind of where we were coming from. And yeah, it's good. My sisters are helping me as well. They do all the styles, so they pick out all the styles. They're the fashion police. So yeah, it's definitely enjoyable. And again, it's something that it's small. It's outside of rugby, and it's something that I can devote a couple hours to on a Wednesday on my day off, have a few calls, and just kind of turn rugby off for a couple of hours and then just look outside of rugby.
We saw pictures yesterday of Rob Kearney growing a beard and shaving his head at Leinster. We know we're trying to raise money for the Feed the Heroes campaign, and everyone is shaving their head, growing a beard, or growing a mustache. Which one are you doing?
I shaved my head last night. So, yeah, there wasn't.
You'd
want
to be careful,
anyway,
Robbie. You're thinning off on top.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot there, so hopefully it'll come back. I don't know, but yeah, it was definitely nerve wracking doing it. It was a bit of crack as well. So I know it's great to see the lads doing something great for the Feed the Heroes campaign. So anything we can do can, you know, go a long way.
Well, Robbie, you said it. You hope that you get back on the pitch soon, and we certainly hope that we get to watch you playing soon. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, no problem, Robbie.
Thanks a million.
Small. Okay, we'll stay on rugby, Marie, if you don't mind, because it's a changing landscape, and we're delighted to be joined by Hannah Bowe, Director of eSportif Europe. They're rugby specialists that cover everything from player management, the commercial side of the game, media, but they're a step ahead of everyone where it comes to insight and intelligence. Hannah, how are you?
That's very kind of you, Donica. I'm not quite sure it's true, but I'll take it.
Yeah, I should also slag that you're Tommy Bull's sister, and I was going to say, Robbie, there's Robbie Henshaw just on before you. He had to go for glasses because Tommy's wrapped up everything else between shows, clothes, the whole lot.
To be fair, I was Googling Robbie's glasses while you were speaking there. They look the part. I might have to get involved.
I promise, if you're looking at computer screens an awful lot, they're brilliant. So, but of course I'd say that.
Sadly so, that's
yes.
My life.
I also have a brilliant pair of Tommy Bow shoes, just to be perfectly fair.
Did you get the ones that are named after you,
Donica? Mine were Wellies, I think. Hannah, we're going off
Sounds
the point.
Right.
Yeah, there's a load going on, and there's always been a north-south divide when it comes to rugby, and we've seen the tiering of nations. But what's your prediction for rugby for the next, you know, 5 years or foreseeable future?
Prediction, that's a strong word. To be fair, something I suppose why I'm on, or why we've ended up chatting is we released a report there about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and we prepared it earlier this year and kind of hummed and hawed as to whether I should go public with it, given the circumstance at the moment. But what we tried to touch on whilst looking at top eight nations was where is it going and what change is coming. A few of which I touched on, and that's hopefully, I think everybody north and south of the horizon hopes that we can, this actually provides an opportunity to really get some agreement on a global calendar, rather than operating on hemisphere divides that, I suppose, break up various parts of the season. There's opportunities, I think, with the involvement of CBC. I think it's somewhat inevitable that we'll see a collaboration in some parts in terms of whether it's a British and Irish league or indeed whether they touch on French rugby. And with that, I think nobody wants European Cup rugby going anywhere, despite what's been heralded, I guess, in the press of late. The question, I suppose, when I look at the calendar in the Northern Hemisphere and the calendar in the Southern Hemisphere, is there's a hell of a lot of rugby for the players to be playing. And with welfare, it's kind of at the forefront of things, or at least we hope so. Is there maybe a touch or an opportunity to reduce potentially the games by a couple in both domestic competition and European competition so that we're getting the best players on the pitch and the best show in town for people to tune into, but yeah, a couple of things like that, I suppose, new platforms, and hopefully for me, we've seen the introduction of the Major League Rugby, and actually a number of Irish players out there, and indeed an Irish backer in New York, but there's an opportunity to kind of really grow that market, particularly with the back of them suggesting an interest in a future Rugby World Cup. So I think that's certainly something to look to, whether it be in the next 5 years or maybe towards 2031.
Hannah, we're regularly speaking about the uncertainty of just when we're going to get back playing, when we're going to back seeing competitions. We don't know when we're going to have people even attending matches again. And while it's great to have the plans for 5 years' time or what potentially could happen in the next few years, how big an impact do you think this time, what's happening now and no sport is going to have on the game of rugby worldwide?
I think it's you know, there's no point in saying this is anything other than a significant bump in the road for sport. But it's with all, we can all hope, and I think it's reasonable to hope and assume that it is short term, sorry, short to medium. You know, in the immediate term, we've got to deal with the fact that there is ultimately no sport, no money coming through the gates, no opportunities for people to tune in, no opportunities to grow a fan base to play out the tournaments that normally get people excited every year. So there's going to be repercussions out of that, where teams are going to, and clubs, unions, everyone is going to have to reassess both spend and revenue on both sides of the column, and indeed deal with that. Thankfully, World Rugby obviously have come out today to suggest that they will also get involved with that, just like the government and all we're seeing, and the various governing bodies trying to help. But the other side of that, I'd be quite positive about, you know, look, maybe 6 months, probably 12 months down the line, where we can start to return to the norm again. And that live sport, if anything, will have grown its interest in terms of, you know, we see how much we miss it now that we don't have it there in front of us, and potentially as we started to take for granted what was on the TV, that we could pop down to watch a match in, you know, in your Donnybrook or in Kingspan or wherever that might be. That's kind of been taken away from us, and I'd like to think that whenever we're allowed to walk outside our doors again, that there'll be a bit of appeal to do so. Now, as I say, in the short term, you've got tightened budget strings and everything, so people are going to have to reassess. But that will, and that's, you know, sport has that unbelievable ability to engage our passions. And I certainly think that that's rugby, in many respects, has the opportunity to really build upon what data and insight they have on the game right now, so that we have an even better product when it returns.
Yeah, we totally agree. Because, Hannah, it's a young sport in terms of its professionalism with loads of heritage and history. But hopefully they'll take the advice with stuff like the British and Irish League, and a global calendar would be incredible. Thanks so much for joining us on Game On.
No worries.
We didn't even get to chat about your dreamy dad.
Pot of balls.
As we keep saying to people, Hannah, we have a few weeks to go yet, so keep your phone on.
Hannah, thanks so much. And we didn't even go over your own hockey career. Shameful on us.
There's some much better players than the Irish system now. Thank you very much.
Thanks, you.
Hannah. Okay, that's it from all the team here on Game On. A massive thank you to Ronan and Jarlett. Graham Smith is filling the big shoes of Dan Hegarty tonight at 10 with The Alternative. Next up, it's the awesome Taris Jord bringing you the best of brand new Irish music and a deadly rap hour. Enjoy, Tara. Stay safe, stay home. Mind yourself. Myself and Marie are back tomorrow at 6. But now it's time for your news. 2FM.